Hello and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Nick Blumberg. Brandis Friedman has the evening off. Here's what we're looking at. The Adams County Sheriff has been cooperating with ICE. Does that violate Illinois law? WTTW News investigates. As kids head back to the classroom, Chicago Public Schools tries to balance its budget. And Argonne's National Laboratory's advanced photon source gets an $815 million upgrade. We explain what it does. First off tonight, some of today's top stories. Summer isn't over yet, but summer break is. Today marks the return to the classroom for Chicago Public School students. It comes at a time of uncertainty, with the district under investigation by the Trump administration for alleged civil rights violations and with the still unresolved budget deficit of more than $700 million. Several school board members pushed back last week on a budget proposal that didn't authorize borrowing and makes a hefty pension payment contingent on additional revenue. The district also cut more than 1,200 custodians hired through private contracts in an effort to close the budget gap, saying it would rehire a smaller number of janitors as CPS employees. Earlier today, union members rallied in the South Loop, slamming that decision.
I'm starting the school year not knowing if I will be finishing it with a job. Not knowing if I will be able to pay for my mortgage, my credit card bills, not knowing if I will be able to pay for health bills and life insurance. Cost of living have only been rising.
And we'll discuss the CPS budget with two members of Chicago's school board in just a moment. Construction of a new concourse at O'Hare Airport is underway. City and airline officials came together this morning to break ground on Concourse D, a new 19-gate satellite concourse. It'll service international and domestic flights and is one part of the major O'Hare modernization effort.
Every time we visit this airport and every time we invest in this airport, we invest in jobs, we invest in our neighborhoods, we invest in working families. We invest in the next generation of Chicagoans. When ORD Next or O'Hare Next program is complete, O'Hare is projected to support 615,000 jobs and add $65 billion to the region annually.
The $1.3 billion Concourse D is set to open in 2028. Up next, we dig into the CPS budget. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
It's the first day of classes for Chicago Public School kids, and as the new academic year kicks off, the district faces a $734 million budget shortfall. Leaders say they crafted a budget proposal to keep cuts out of the classroom, but the plan to fill the hole leans heavily on one-time funding, raising questions about long-term stability. Joining us to discuss more are Mikayla Blaze, a CPS board member representing District 5B with constituents in neighborhoods like North Lawndale and Garfield Park, and CPS board member G2 Brown, who represents District 5A, which includes neighborhoods like Austin and Ukrainian Village. Thank you both for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
You know, so as we mentioned, that massive budget shortfall CPS is facing down, the proposal that came out last week includes $126 million in savings from things like central office staff reductions, IT project delays, hiring freezes, as we mentioned, an effort to keep cuts from classrooms. Mikayla Blaze, are you concerned those cuts might still have ripple effects on students?
I know that the focus, we've tried to focus on keeping cuts from classrooms, but we've already cut safe passage workers and some crossing guards. So in the community I represent, it really does impact. What happens outside impacts the classroom. So I think of things comprehensively, and we've already made some cuts that are going to be tough for us.
Yeah, affecting the overall sort of school community, even if it's not classroom specific. Well, you know, another portion of the budget plan is a $79 million bump in TIF revenue assumptions, bringing the total expected from the city to nearly $379 million. G2 Brown, do you think CPS should be relying on TIF money?
I think that, yes, those resources are available. I know as we as the process for disentanglement happens, that can change in the future. But while we are dramatically underfunded by the state of Illinois, every dollar we can get is money that we need.
Yeah, so maybe not what you want to see long term, but in the moment, something
yes,
needed.
Yes, sir.
Michaela Blaze, how about that? TIF funding as part of the budget?
As Member Brown said, it's more of a tourniquet to stop what's happening. We are, according to the state's own funding formula, $1.6 billion underfunded. And the state's trying. They gave us an additional $300 million this year. But at this rate, we won't get to fully funded schools until 2037. So we're hoping they can ramp up the schedule there and really start giving our kids what they need to be successful.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, lawmakers have said, obviously, they want to see schools fully funded, you know, under that sort of, you know, the current formula that is in place. But, you know, the CPS isn't the only district not receiving its full freight from the state of Illinois.
Absolutely.
Do you have any expectations that we'll see, you know, full funding or at least an increase in funding before 2037? It's gotten not necessarily great signals from lawmakers on that.
Well, I think you prioritize what is important to you. We have the money to make prisons. We have the money to do a variety of things, to help football teams. We have lots of money to do lots of things. And I always say that our schools are an economic engine. If we can really solve, particularly CPS, lots of people come to Chicago when they're young or grow up here, and then when they have children, they move to the suburbs because they're a little nervous about whether their kids are safe. But if we can keep them in Chicago and we can keep all their tax revenue in Chicago, we'll all be better off.
That's right. And you think about this, you know, we're the fifth largest economy in the United States. And for decades, we were 49th in public education funding. So due to some good work that was done around 2017, in a hostile state of Illinois, we moved up to 37th. But 37th is not enough. So what we're calling for is not a bailout. It's not a handout. It is funding schools equitably across the state of Illinois. I mean, because while we have a crisis in Chicago, there's also a crisis in East St. Louis. There's also a crisis in Robbins, Cairo, right? And so we believe to help Chicago grow, to help the state of Illinois grow, we support the Illinois Revenue Alliance's proposals, which are some short and long-term solutions. For example, a tax on digital ads,
sure,
right? And several other proposals that the Illinois Revenue Alliance has that we think, with political will, can actually land us, you know, quickly to actually, as Michaela said, tie a tourniquet in the wound, but then also heal the wound, which has not been done in previous administrations, right? Loans have been taken out for years, right, with no state strategy to really address the structural deficit. We're saying that we have to tie a tourniquet in the wound, but then we also have to heal the wound.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the controversial parts of this plan is deferring that $175 million pension payment unless CPS gets, you know, additional TIF funding or money from the state. You know, Michaela, you said this was a foolhardy approach. What are your concerns there?
I'm concerned about CPS being a good partner. The situation that we're in right now, we are $734 million in the hole. And we need to make as many friends as we can to make sure that we keep the ship sailing. The city council had gave us the most TIF money that has ever been given to CPS last year, and they asked for some of it back, and we didn't do that. I'm concerned that we are creating ill will and that they're not going to be willing to bail us out as we as we get stronger and as we grow and as we get the funding that we need to stand on our own feet, we've got to learn how to play nice with everybody.
G.T. Brown, how about that, deferring that pension payment?
No, I agree with Board Member Blaze. I think there was a commitment made to City Council, which resulted in the largest TIF surplus ever to Chicago Public Schools. And I think it's naive to think that if we don't provide that agreed upon support, we know that it's not mandatory, but that agreed upon support, then it's foolhardy to think that they're going to not spend their TIFs so that we would have a large TIF surplus again. So I think, as Board Member Blaze said, it's being a good partner, but it's also, you know, politics 101, right?
Sure.
So, yes, sir.
It's all personal.
And just to be clear, the entire MEABF pension payment is $1 billion. Half of that is CPS employees, so we'd say roughly $500 million should be our portion. And the city's only asking for us to put in $175 million, which they're giving us in TIF. So if you look at it comprehensively, we still end up on the plus side, and we also have skin in the game, and we're taking care of our employees.
Mm-hmm. Well, this plan also, you know, doesn't include any borrowing to cover pension costs or teacher salaries. G.T. Brown, would you want to see a loan in the final budget plan?
I don't think anybody wants to see a loan. But I think to guarantee that we will not have cuts in the classroom, because historically, those cuts have been palatable and they've been on the backs of black and brown children in the city of Chicago. So we are saying absolutely no way are we accepting cuts and additional cuts in the classroom. So we want to see the language that says the payment will be made, not contingent, it will be made by either the money revenue raised from the state or if necessary, borrowing. Again, disentanglement is not like a quickie divorce. It's a process that we have to go through. And part of that process is taking on the responsibility of working with our partners in the State House and coming up with solid solutions, like raising our tax levy so that we're able to actually use income taxes to bring additional revenue into the district. I'm bringing that up because many of the critics of this approach don't address the fact that there was no state strategy in the past, right? And we can't forget the past, right? Because that is reflective of what you believe. And so it's gonna really be important that we make sure that we do the work on the back end to do long-term correction of this structural deficit. And you can have a whole show on how the structural deficit happened.
Several.
From the pension holidays all the way to now, right? But I think it's really important for us to realize that this board is not the rubber stamp boards of the past.
Sure.
This board has elected and appointed members. All, like me and her, we both have children in Chicago Public Schools. Mm-hmm. We have, as she said, skin in the game. So this is our approach. This board will not pass a budget that does not guarantee that there won't be cuts in mid-year.
We've got a little less than a minute left, but I want to ask, you know, CPS is currently operating with an interim leader, Maculin King, after the firing of Pedro Martinez late last year. Mm-hmm. Mikayla Blaze, how do you think she's handling the role so far?
I was brought into the board after the other board quit. So I can tell you this is a tough position to be in. I know there's lots of forces putting lots of pressure on her, but I'm excited that she's going to bring calm and she's going to bring decisive leadership, and I'm very excited to be working with her.
Certainly a lot of CPS parents and families looking for calm in the district right now.
Indeed.
All right, well, much more to say, but unfortunately we are out of time, so my thanks to Mikayla Blaze and G2 Brown. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Up next, a WTTW News investigation finds downstate officials violating Illinois law. The sheriff of Adams County, Illinois, says he'll collaborate with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. That's despite state law generally prohibiting local law enforcement from working with federal immigration authorities. And according to records obtained by WTTW News, the sheriff has made good on his promise. Our Blair Paddock joins us now with more on our investigation. So, Blair, how has the sheriff here followed through?
Yeah, we found three ways that the sheriff on the west side of the state has collaborated with ICE. The first way is that they transferred a man who was in their custody into ICE custody. We know that through an ICE affidavit that we acquired. The second instance is through jail booking records. We know that Adams County held a man on a civil immigration detainer and then transferred that man into ICE custody. The third instance is through a contract that Adams County Jail has through U.S. Marshal Services. That contract has a carve-out specifically for ICE to detain people at Adams County Jail for $80 a day.
So some pretty clear documentation there. You spoke with a lawyer who helped work on Illinois sanctuary laws. What did he have to say?
Yeah, I spoke to Mark Fleming. He's with the National Immigrant Justice Center, and he helped work on the two sanctuary laws in the state, the Illinois Way Forward Act and the Trust Act. And he said that these appear to be violations of these acts. You know, Illinois law enforcement is not prohibited, or is prohibited, sorry, to aid federal immigration authorities in civil immigration enforcement. And as for the contract, this has been litigated before, it seems. Adams County has this contract with U.S. Marshals, and he said there was a similar contract between McHenry County and Kankakee County that had carve-outs for ICE to detain people. Those two counties sued to try and stop the Illinois Way Forward Act to keep these contracts, but a federal judge ruled that, you know, Illinois Way Forward Act is sound, and they had to cancel those contracts.
So, you know, the Attorney General's office oversees compliance of these laws. What did you hear from that office?
Yeah, well, I didn't hear anything after repeated requests for comment. But Fleming did say that the AG has broad authority to investigate, and that could lead to, you know, reporting requirements for officials that are allegedly breaking the Trust Act, or further training in more serious instances. It could lead to contempt proceedings against officials.
Interesting. Well, Blair, I know you'll be keeping an eye on it. Great work. Thank you.
Thank you.
And you can read Blair's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news. Since 1995, Argonne National Laboratory, located just southwest of Chicago, has been at the forefront of atomic-scale research in the United States. At the heart of that research is the Advanced Photon Source, or APS, a huge particle accelerator that generates super-bright X-rays by accelerating electrons to near light speed in a circular storage ring. Those X-rays, controlled by powerful magnets, are then diverted to more than 70 separate beam lines, which have been used to probe all manner of things, from the structure of the COVID virus to microscopic defects in a jet engine turbine blade to new battery designs. But after nearly three decades and thousands of experiments, the APS was beginning to show its age. And in April 2023, it went offline to allow for an $815 million Department of Energy-funded upgrade. Chicago Tonight producer Paul Kane has the story.
We started planning for this over 10 years ago.
Elmi Peoples-Evans, who we first met in 2023, is responsible for choreographing the complex logistical, engineering, and technical dance required to complete the project.
The upgrade came about as a way to take the existing APS facility to the next level. So we wanted a brighter machine. They wanted to do different techniques and enhance the capabilities that we had here, and so that we compete on a worldwide stage. We want to keep APS as a world-leading machine.
As the new brighter beam lines come online, already scientists are benefiting from the improvements that have been made. Shelley Kelly leads the spectroscopy group at Argonne.
The old beam was typically about a millimeter high, but maybe 10 millimeters wide. So now we've taken all of those x-rays that we had before and squeezed them into a 1 millimeter by 1 millimeter square area. So in that 1 millimeter by 1 millimeter, we have like 500 times the brightness that we had before.
That greater brightness allows scientists from the Midwest and across the globe to study materials with much higher precision and at much faster speeds.
We have the most brilliant x-rays in the world, especially in the high energy x-ray regime. So if people need to push the limits of time and space, which many want to, they need to come here because this is the only place where they can do a certain amount of research.
The biggest change is in how many orders of magnitude of scale in a material you can access. And so you can follow the changes in a material right from near the atomic scale all the way up to the macro scale. And you can do this in what we call a multimodal fashion, which means you can study different aspects of the material at the same time. So it's the difference between watching a movie in black and white and watching it in color.
And each year, more than 5,000 researchers use the APS to advance knowledge in all fields of science at the nanoscale.
We have people doing a lot of chemistry, looking at new batteries. We have a lot of users in the biological field, so they're looking at proteins and new drugs for drug discovery. And we have people looking in material science and engineering. And they come in with a lot of energy and interesting problems from the different scientific domains.
But what makes Argonne special are not just the tools that are available to scientists.
I would say the number one thing that makes this facility special is the staff that work here and their ability to get right in with the scientists that come here from all over the world and do measurements. And so we learn about the problems that they are trying to solve, and then we help them design their experiments here to get the most out of their data.
The upgrade also includes the construction of additional long beam lines.
This, I believe, is the largest enclosure in the world for X-ray measurements like this. The whole room is lead lined, so this is a very big construction project that was done about 2 years ago. And so basically we built the house earlier, and now we're putting in the furniture.
Furniture allowing atomic scale analysis with real world applications.
So we can take our X-ray beams and we can bring them down in this beam line to about 1 micron. That's a hundredth of a human hair, very small. Right now we're looking at a turbine blade. This is a titanium blade that can be used in jet engines. Research scientists and engineers are interested in looking at the mechanical properties of these materials. As you fly, you have stresses and temperatures that these things are subjective to. So almost all materials are made of multiple grains, crystallographic grains, like all metals and ceramics. And what this allows you to do is grain by grain, see how the stresses develop, see how they're related, see how cracks form.
The fascinating thing about materials is that the concerted motion of a few hundred atoms or so can eventually lead to materials failure. So a few atoms start moving together, they form what's called a dislocation. These dislocations pile up, they cause a stress buildup in the material. That leads to the formation of a crack, the crack grows, and then a bridge collapses or an airplane engine fails.
Because the upgraded APS can see in so much greater detail, that also means far more data to analyze. But Argonne researchers use Aurora, one of the world's fastest supercomputers, capable of 2 billion, billion calculations per second, along with artificial intelligence to focus and refine their inquiries.
We have a pipe, essentially, that connects the instruments at the APS to the supercomputing resources. We produce a lot of data, hundreds of petabytes a year. So to put that in perspective, that's tens of DVDs full of data every minute. And hidden in that data is insight into the problems that we're trying to solve. We could interpret this data, but it would take a big computer crunching the numbers for a long period of time versus AI that would do this in near real time. And so providing feedback to the scientists to tweak their experiment, stop their experiment, pause, study things in a bit in more detail and so on. And so AI lets us parse all of that data very quickly and find these precursors to material failure, help us understand why these materials fail, in turn help us design better materials. We haven't even started scratching the surface of how AI and computing is going to help us unlock capabilities from our facility.
Peoples Evans says the project is about 98% done and hopes to complete the final elements of the upgrade by the end of September.
Working on APSU has been challenging, and I think it's been probably the most thrilling thing I've done over my career. There have been ups, there have been downs, but I don't think there's much that I would change in how it all came together.
For Chicago Tonight, I'm Paul Kane.
Pretty fascinating stuff. You can read more about the Argonne Advanced Photon Source upgrade on our website. And that's our show for this Monday night. Be sure to sign up for our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan. That's at WTTW.com/newsletter. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that contributes to public safety policy and guidelines.